that we would like to sort of give a bunch of examples where this sort of technology appears and to give a general idea of how it works. Maybe a systematization is a very beautiful subject.
With a lot of nice geometric meaning, but it's a bit obscure to get into it at first, somewhat counterintuitive. In a sense, it's also just one example of a pretty general technology which is occurs a lot, both in theoretical physics and in mathematics. So the general idea that you can play bosonic and fermionic degrees of freedom against each other. So you can, for example, if you have, you can give a redundant description which has some extra bosonic degrees of freedom, and make sure that the effect of these bosonic degrees of freedom cancels out by adding extra fermionic degrees of freedom, whose role is to cancel out the bosonic ones. These sort of cancellations are ensured by a symmetry, which is called Birsky symmetry, which is that exchanges bosons and fermions. Sort of pairs up whatever bosonic degrees of freedom and whatever fermionic degrees of freedom we want to cancel against each other. Now, the way the ghosts are usually introduced is as a way to deal in a convenient way with a change of variables. So for example, in our situation, we are given some sort of, we're trying to make sense of some integral over matrix on the worksheet over the theorem of fisms and wild transformations. And a way you can, so we are sort of trying to transform these into some integral over some finite set of parameters which give you, which label equivalence classes of matrix modulo the theorem of fisms and vial. So a way to go from here to here might be the following. Let's say that I pick my reference matrix as a function of these parameters. Then I apply to them a gauge transformation, which means the different morphism and the wild transformation. So I get a new matrix. Maybe I should put to make sure that this is the reference matrix. So here I just took a reference matrix and applied to it a general diffeomorphism and wild transformation. If this family of matrix is large enough, this is essentially a sort of a change of coordinates, meaning that on the space of matrix. In the sense that I could imagine that I'm expressing this variable in terms of new variables, the lambdas, the f's, and the phi's. Okay. And intuitively, if I can convert this first into an integral in these new variables, then throwing away the homomorphisms of transformations would be more or less the same as removing these variables. Of course, when I do a change of variables in an integral, I need to pay a price, which is a Jacobian. So here I had to insert some Jacobian. Usually the Jacobian is the determinant of a finite dimensional, a finite matrix, but in this case it would be some horrid thing involving the variation of the matrix with respect of all these variables. Um, So you transform the problem of making sense of this into problem of making sense of this determinant. And then there is a nice way to think about determinants, which involves Grassmann integration. So to trade this determinant for a path integral over some fermionic variables, which are the ghosts. So perhaps from that point of view, the simplest the simplest thing I could do would be to just look at how this PRST structure emerges when I do a change of variables in some integral. So suppose I'm given some integral or some variables, let's do things finite dimensional for simplicity, okay, or some manifold, maybe with some action. And I want to rewrite it in terms of, as an integral on some other variables by doing a change of variable. So I would write something like this. Maybe I should put
there that the Jacobian that you get should intuitively be a determinant of something, some operator or something involving functional derivatives of H to those variables.
That's right.
But why exactly that form?
What do you mean, that form?
Like, you write down a very specific thing, right? Functional derivative of H to lambda multiplied by...
No. I'm just noting a big matrix. This matrix has rows which are labeled by matrix and columns, which are labeled by lambda, f, and phi. So I'm just trying to depict the matrix of coordinate transformation, the Jacobian for the change of variable from h to lambda, f, phi. There is no content here, okay? It's just a name I gave to this determinant. There is no... what is it you don't like about this expression?
No, it's fine. I just thought you were actually multiplying things.
No. It's just... I don't know. <It's, Okay. laughs> the matrix is what's inside the parentheses. And then... Maybe I should just put spaces. I don't think that would be better.
I didn't put commas. That was the problem.
Ah, okay.
Sorry.
Good. So, okay, from here to here is quite uneventful. Then I could rewrite this in the following form. So these new variables, B and C, are fermionic variables, Grassmannov variables. If you remember the rules of Grassmann integration, so when a function of Grassmann variables, for example, let me do Grassmann integration in one variable. Say the tau theta is a Grassmann, okay. Did you guys see Grassmann integrals? Okay, good, I don't need to do this. Anyway, one of the basic facts of Grassmann integration is that if I have some integral that form e to the IACA, okay. This is determinant of A. And you see, just by expanding this exponent, expand it out, and you try to you need to pick one B for each B, one C for each C. So you get a product of an A's of all permutation of indices. Okay, so this is also pretty uneventful. Now, a nice fact about these changes of variables, there are two nice facts here. First, this will compute the same as this, no matter how complicated is this function. It is a complicated function. This will be more complicated integral than this. For example, I could imagine that this was just quadratic. Right? A simple example would have been that S of x was x squared, and y is x plus x squared. Okay, then this would be a quartic function of y. And then I also have added some sort of an interaction between b, c, and y. But overall, this complicated integral will have to reproduce the same as this, the same answer as this. You can even imagine doing Feynman diagrams in here, right? The sum of all infinitely many Feynman diagrams must all cancel out because I need to reproduce the same answer as this. Also, the answer that I get doesn't quite depend on the details of this function. I could have changed my change of variables, deformed it in various ways. The answer should not change. So this integral must have quite special properties in order to always reproduce this one, no matter what I do with the f's. A way to encode, to make manifest these special properties, is to observe that this integral has a hidden symmetry. So this is how the RST symmetry usually occurs first. You observe that you can define the following symmetry. And we call the generator Q. So this is going to be an odd fermionic symmetry. And I define it in such a way that it squares to zero. If you want, the reason is that if I have a fermionic symmetry and I square it, this is the anticommutator of the symmetry itself. So this will be another symmetry. This integral would not have, which would be a bosonic symmetry. But I'm not trying to. Okay, I just want to add one symmetry, the fermionic symmetry. So I impose a Q square vanishes. So my symmetry will act this way. It will act on Y, mapping it to the C ghosts. It will map to B. That B, and we mapped it where? Well, I want this to be invariant under the symmetry. So let's compute QS equal DS over DX DF over DY CI. So if I want the variation, if I want this to be invariant under the symmetry, I need to cancel this variation against the variation of that, which I can do just by setting this to df, ds over dxa. Okay? So I can define this symmetry, and it's a symmetry of this integral. Furthermore, if I look at what happens to Q squared, sorry, I define also QC equal to zero for now, so that sorry, I might be making a mistake. So I prepared this example quickly this morning. I might have made a mistake. Let me check. Now I think I might have to add something extra here that is proportional to BC. But I'm sorry. Okay, let me know the Q square equal to zero yet, because I'm still just trying to show that this has some interesting symmetry. There must be a way to fix this. I'm not sure what I did wrong. Sure, this is a useful exercise at this point. Well, that's what I get for not using my notes. I mean, I know how to fix this, but just a second. But at least let me show that this is a symmetry. Then we'll proceed. So there are two pieces in the action. There is this, and there is this. The variation of this has various contributions. And there is a variation of B. Which is going to cancel out against the variation of the action. Then there is a variation of this expression, which might still be a function of y. This vanishes because these are Grassmannov variables, and this is a symmetric expression. And then I just set QC equal to zero. So for now, this is a symmetry of this action. Now I'm a little confused by the fact that this symmetry is supposed to square to zero. So I must be missing something. I did not do this check this morning, clearly. But it's possible that in order to make it square to zero nicely, one has to add a little bit of extra modifications. So I'll leave it for later. But okay, so but this is more or less how the BST symmetry comes about. It starts with some integral some set of variables, you want to change your variable to some other variables, which for some reason are more convenient, you write it like this. Once you write it like this, it's nice because instead of a complicated determinant, which in the path integral case would have been a functional determinant, you just get a path integral, a new piece to your path integral with some auxiliary degrees of freedom. Another useful fact is that this symmetry, as I was saying, helps understand why the final answer depends so little on the choices you made. So, for example, suppose I wanted to change my f's by some infinitesimal amount. Okay. So the action will change by delta f times ds over df. Plus it's going to be a derivative, which you can sort of integrate by parts. I want to say it properly. So suppose I change my f to f plus delta s. Okay? Then I want to say that the change of the action can be written as q of something. So suppose I add a q on on BA del FA. What do I get? I get two terms. I get del S over del XA del FA minus, sorry, plus, because Q is passing across B and this produces an extra sign, B del DFA over del YI CI. Okay, so that means that, so this is the same as the variation of the action under a change of F. So that means that if I take my integral for modified choice of f, and this is the same as the original action, plus something which is Q acting on something else. Okay. Sorry. Let me just bring it down. But because Q is a symmetry, this vanishes. Change vanishes. Sorry. Okay. So I'm expanding the, I'm taking the action for modified change of coordinates. I'm expanding it out in the leading order in the change. And I get something which vanishes because Q is a symmetry. So I can sort of integrate by parts. So in this situation, the BRST symmetry is something you can use to make sure that this change of coordinate does not really depend on the answer. It reproduces the original integral, no matter what change of coordinate you're doing. But here, it means that if you sort of can reproduce this general structure here, we'll get an answer which will not depend on how a specific gauge fixed our metric. So a way to think about the BRST quantization, the BRST symmetry is the following. I start with this, I'm gonna start with my gauge theory. I wanna gauge fix it, but I want my answer not to depend on the gauge fixing. So I will write the answer in a way, in this way, make sure that it has a BRST symmetry. The BRST symmetry will make sure that the answer is independent of the gauge fixing. Which means that, so this is a, see, having a gauge symmetry, when you have an infinite dimensional gauge symmetry, is kind of problematic because you need to simplify infinite things against infinite things. Having a gauge fixed symmetry with a BRST symmetry is much better, because the gauge fix, having a gauge fixed symmetry means that you're not dealing with infinite dimensional constellations. But at the same time, the BRST symmetry makes sure that this precise choice of gauge fixing didn't matter. So essentially make sure that even if you have gauge fixed, the theory remembers the original gauge symmetry. Any questions? Okay, so after these motivations, let me just give simpler examples of systems with an odd symmetry. Okay, this was a pretty complicated example. Okay, I had all sorts of variables, y's, b's, c's, complicated transformation rules. So let me do something simpler. For example, suppose there's some bosonic variables and some fermionic variables. And I define my symmetry in the simplest possible way. So here is definitely an Q of theta equals to zero. Okay, so I set it up that it definitely squares to zero. Because Q of theta already is already zero. Q of x gives me theta, and Q of theta gives zero. So now suppose I'm looking at some integrals. Okay. So which of these integrals are symmetric? So for this, so if I want to use this symmetry, the things I'm integrating better be symmetric. So I can require the Q of the of my observables vanishes. After I do that, something nice happens. Because Q squared vanishes, if one of my observables is Q or something else, then the whole thing will vanish. So the list of things I can put inside this integral is things that are closed under Q, solutions, you know, these are called Q closed. So things that are annihilated by Q, these are Q called Q closed. Modulo, things that are Q of something else, these are Q exact. So the sort of questions I can ask to these sort of integrals are integrals of Q closed things, and the answers will not depend, no, will not change if I shift the observable by Q exact things. Now, what questions can we actually ask in this setup? So what are the closed things? Well, there are not many closed things. That are also, well, let's see. Let me start from a function of, from some function of x only. Q, this function of x, will vanish only if f is a constant. Because when I do the variation of f, I get ci df over dxi. So for this to vanish, it must be the case that f is a constant. This is a bit boring. Next, I can look at something like fi, theta, sorry, theta, I meant theta, theta I.
Mm-hmm. What's the problem if an observable is, like, what's the word, exact?
Exact.
Like, it can be written as Q times another.
Oh, it's not a point, it's just it will vanish, the answer will vanish when you put it in the calculation.
Why exactly?
Oh, because if I have an integral of Q of something, or 2, or 3, and so on, and this is a symmetry, I can, so having a symmetry means that the integral of Q of something vanishes. Is this the case? Well, let's check if this is the case, first of all. So, well, this is the case because this is clearly a symmetry of the measure too, because we're just doing a triangular transformation, redefining the x's by thetas. So this must be true. Also, you can check it by hand. You can really write the most general thing inside here, add to Q on it, and see that you always get something that integrates by parts. For example, here, suppose I put Q of f, then I get an integral of df over dx, which vanishes. Now, if I have Q of something and other observables, I can write this as an integral of that something times or 2 times or 3, etc., minus something Q of or 2 or 3, etc., plus blah, blah, blah. And so if these are closed, this will vanish, this will vanish, another will vanish. So if everything is closed, exacting vanish when they're inserted in the integral. As long as you can integrate by parts, as long as the symmetry is a true symmetry of the problem. Now, if I now do Q of something linear in the thetas, I get di, dxi, dfi, or dxj, minus dfj, or dxi, theta I, theta j. So for something to be closed, it must be the df I over dxj equal dfj over dxi. Now, if you're just working in flat space, you can always integrate something like that. Right, dfi says the derivative of something. Which means that in flat space, there are some closed things, but these closed things are all exact. And this keeps going. So if we are on flat, if this was an integral of flat space, the answer is kind of boring. The only non-trivial things you can integrate is one. But it's easy to make this work on a more general manifold. These equations make sense on a general manifold because if I do a change of coordinates, then acting with Q, I get something like this. And I can just define these as my new theta variables in the new patch. So as long as these thetas are glued around the manifold in the same way as vectors are, I get something sensible. And again, Q of the theta primes it's zero just because Q squared is zero. Now, if I'm a non-trivial manifold, this problem becomes more interesting. So, who has seen before differential forms? Okay, some. So, if you keep looking at this problem, you discover differential forms. So, but just to show that there is a situation where this is already a bit, where there are a bit more observables, suppose that X was a variable on a circle, meaning that X is identified with X plus 2 pi. Okay. Then, it's true that, so now let's suppose I'm looking for some observable this form. When, if this is obviously closed, because theta squared is zero, when I act with Q, Q of theta gives me zero, Q of X produces a theta, but this Q, theta squared is zero. When is this exact? Well, when is that I can write a function on the circle as the derivative of another function? Not always, if I want the other function to also be single valued. One is not the derivative of a function on the circle. So now, the closed modulo exact sort of things consist of the identity and of theta. Now, let's think about this a bit more. So, so we started from a situation where we had a lot of observables, a lot of functions. We had function on the circles and function of this extra variable. But imposing the BRSA symmetry has cut down the space of things we can, of questions we can ask by a lot. In a sense, the Grassmann-Null variable has cancelled out the bosonic variable almost completely. Locally, it completely cancels it out. And only some top global information is left. See, if I do the problem on the real line, I found some set of observables. If I did it on the circle, I find a slightly different set of observables. So this problem still knows about the global structure of the space, but it doesn't know anything about the local structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not exactly following. So Qx is theta.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying theta is closed but not exact.
That's right.
How is that not exact?
Because x is not a variable, not a function on the circle. So if I do integrals on the circle, I cannot use x. X is not a well-defined function.
What do you mean x is not a well-defined?
Which is x, is the angle a function on the circle?
Well, it's not a smooth one.
Hmm? So, let me say better. What is the derivative of x if x is valued on the circle? It's 1 minus delta function at pi, if you want, or at 2 pi. I mean, wherever you want to put your discontinuity.
Okay.
This is not 1. So it means that 1 is not the of something.
So it means that 1 is not the 1.
So it means that 1 was not the derivative of something.
Okay.
I mean, can you find a function on a circle whose derivative is 1? Clearly not, because the integral of the derivative of a function vanishes.
Yes. Okay.
The integral of 1 does not vanish.
Yes.
Okay. So this is important. This is a second theme. Global questions can see the difference. So the fact that this theta exists is precisely related to the fact that I can integrate things on the circle. So I can detect that there is no function which makes this exact. If you repeat this exercise for the sphere, it's trickier, right? You need to have two coordinate patches, it requires some work. But if you do it for a sphere, the answer will be that there is 1, and then there is something with 2 thetas. And this is closely related to the fact that there is on the sphere, there is a non-trivial integral that wraps the whole sphere, but there is no non-trivial integral that wraps the line. You can always shrink lines on a sphere. So this is called cohomology. If you give a manifold with this sort of BRST symmetry, the set of functions of x's and thetas are something called differential forms. There are nice operations on differential forms. You can multiply them, you can act with Q on them. You can integrate them on a manifold. And if you look at closed form modulo exact forms, you compute something called the cohomology of your manifold, the Ramm cohomology, which knows only about global topological properties of your manifold. Even if you define it using functions have a lot of local information about the manifold. So what's going on is that in this situation, the thetas are sort of canceling out the x's. They're eliminating all the local information about the x's, and only the global structure is left. Now, yes.
So, can I have the other?
Yes.
So, the number of the figures that they have, would they all correspond to the number of dimensions of the manifold?
Mm? The number of thetas?
Yeah.
Yes. The number of things here? No.
No, the thetas, no?
Oh, no, it depends. So if I have a general thing, I could have some observables with no thetas, some observable with one theta, some observable with two thetas, so
okay.
with three thetas.
Okay.
If my manifold was disconnected, for example, I might have multiple things here.
Uh-huh.
Because I could have a function which is one on a piece of the manifold and zero on the other.
Okay.
This would also be closed and not exact.
Okay.
Locally constant. Okay. Now,
when you mentioned theta, that's a Grassmann variable?
Yes.
Not an angle.
Hmm?
Not
an angle, okay. Sorry, yes. Theta is a Grassmann variable here. Now, the next step that you could might want to take is, suppose I have a space okay, and which is a vibration. Meaning that I've sliced it up into infinitely many slices. And somehow, suppose that the slices were all different, all equivalent, all in equivalent descriptions of the same thing. This happens when you have a gauge symmetry, for example. You describe there is a space of all gauge fields, but gauge fields which are related by gauge transformation should be considered equivalent. So suppose you wanted to do an integral, but on the space of slices. Well, one way you might think of doing that is by sort of trying to erase the information about sort of erase the direction along the slices by adding fermionic variables which go in the same direction. Now, concretely, when you have a situation like this, what you have are sort of, you think about having vector fields that describe these directions where things are equivalent, remain the same. Now, let me just write down a simple BRST system which will allow you to do calculations in this setup. Okay? So the system will look like this. I'm just going to have a mismatch in a number of bosonic variables and of fermionic variables. So now, because I have a mismatch, now I will have to pick some coefficients for these transformations. Let me make them position dependent even. Now let's do q square of x. I'm going to get VIA of x QCA, and I'm also going to get DVIA over DXJ C VJB CB CA. So now, because this is anti-symmetric, I can actually anti-symmetrize these two indices. Okay. Now notice, this is something that takes, say, V1 and V2, which are vectors of my, so these are essentially vectors of my manifold, because they have one index up. Right? And I have some operation here that takes two vectors and does something like this. V1j, dj, v2i, minus v2j, dj, v1i. So it turns out that this is a new vector, which is called the Lie bracket of v1 and v2. The meaning of the Lie bracket is the following. When you have a vector field, you can use it to transport things. If you have two vector fields, you can transport them along one vector and then along the other, or vice versa. The two operations will not commute. The difference between the two is the transport along the Lie bracket. So very, very concretely, if you define differential operators like this, and you take their commutator, you will find a new differential operator. Which is the Lie bracket. So whenever a situation like this, and I take the Lie bracket of two vector fields that go along my leaves, my fibers, I get another vector which goes in that direction. So it's natural to expect to have a situation where the Poisson bracket of two of these vector fields is another of these vector fields. Okay? So this allows me to rewrite this in terms of FAB V, and allows me to cancel this variation by saying that QC is FABC CB CC. So with this definition, Q square X vanishes. You can now check what happens if you do Q square of C. It's a bit of a messy calculation, but the fact that it vanishes essentially follows from Jacobi identity of the commutator. So you can write down an equation. So write that this is true. Write down this equation and look what happens if you do Poisson bracket of VA, VB, VC. This Poisson bracket satisfies Jacobi identity because it's a commutator. And the Jacobi identity gives you differential equations for the Fs. If you plug it in here, you'll find the Q square C is zero. It's a nice exercise. So these are the transformations. And now you can ask, okay, suppose I'm now doing integrals of some observables dx, dc. What sort of questions can I ask? Well, for example, suppose I have a function which is constant on the fibers. Meaning there's some function of x such that vai vi of x equals to zero. Well, then it's going to be annihilated by q. So one typical observable should be some function on the total manifold which doesn't actually depend on where you are on the fibers. And you can keep keep going. Another thing would be some forms along the fibers. Again, there are things that can be integrated along the fibers, but don't really need depend on the precise shape, on the precise local information, only on global information. So if you study this sort of cohomology, this sort of BRST complex, it allows you to think about, in a systematic way, about integrals on this space which don't care much about the details of the fiber, only perhaps the topology. So this is going to be one piece of the BRST complex, if we use the dual gauge theory, is the piece that sort of you essentially is used to enforce the constraint that you're looking at gauge invariant things. See, this something that satisfies an equation like this, something is constant on the fiber, is an observable which is gauge invariant. Now, there's another. So here we, in all of, so here we've been looking at situations where have a bosonic variable, and then Q the bosonic variable gives me a fermionic variable. Let me look at the opposite situation. Suppose I have some fermionic variable, and Q of the fermionic variable gives me a bosonic variable. So this sort of setup is something used to impose constraints. For example, suppose I also had some other bosonic variables who just go along for the ride. Okay. And then suppose I want to do an integral but I want to impose a constraint on this integral. So I have some space of axis, but I don't want to do the integral of the whole space. I want to do the integral over the solution of some equation. So so usually I would like to say something like this. Put a delta function in F. Now, if I write something like this, this will definitely depend on the function I put here, and it will change if I change my function a little bit. Suppose though I wanted something that does not change if I change my function a little bit. So one way to do that is to put here something like. I'm running out of time and I'm trying to squeeze things too much. What I'm trying to do is to sort of add a new ingredient here that allows me to do integrals over submanifolds in a convenient way. See, these are integrals. These are giving me integrals of things on the whole manifold. Now, suppose I take that gadget and I sort of add to it a new gadget. So I have Q of x equal to theta, Q of theta equal to 0, but I'm adding some Q of b equal to capital B, Q of capital B equal to 0. And these are fermionic and these are bosonic. So adding these variables allows me to write a nice action. Now I can write an action, which is a Q of BF of X. So let me expand it out. This is capital B F of X plus little b, actually minus little b, df over dxi, theta I. Okay? So, and suppose I now consider integrals of e to the s, or 1, or n, dx, d theta, db, db. Okay? Now, this has an integral in db of e to the, of e to the, let me put an I, b, f of x. That's the same as delta of f of x. There is also an integral in the little b of e to the I b df over dxi theta I. Okay? So if I do my okay. So if my observables did not depend on capital B and little b, then this will sort of give me a delta function that restricts me on the submanifold, but at the same time also pull down this gadget, which combines in a nice way with the delta function. So the gadget there is giving me sort of a form. A one form, which is localized on this manifold. This one form is called the Poincaré dual of the manifold. It has some very nice property. In particular, it does not depend on a specific location of the submanifold. So if you have an integral like this with some other forms, you can deform the location of this submanifold freely and the answer will not change. Here is written as a sharp, you know, a sharp distribution sitting on the manifold. But it can be done in smoother ways. For example, nothing would prevent me from adding to the action something like b squared, because b squared is q closed. If I add b squared, then I'll have a Gaussian instead. I have something like e to the minus f squared over t, df, or dxi. Okay. It will be sort of an integral which is it's smeared away from the submanifold, but she reproduces the same answers as the integral on the actual manifold. Okay, so I've introduced the two basic ingredients that I will need tomorrow. So tomorrow we're gonna build up a complex which uses some fields, some directions associated to gauge transformations, fermionic directions associated to gauge transformations, and some other fermionic directions associated to gauge fixings. And it will be set up in such a way that I will get the same answer no matter how I gauge fix. Okay. So this is sort of a combination of a theory of forms on the fibers and just functions on the conjugacy classes. So, okay. So you're trying to make the gauge directions topological.